I'm Darren Levy, and this is Citywide, airing every Tuesday evening from 7:30 to 8 p.m. right here on WNYU 89.1 FM New York and WNYU.org New York University Radio. Citywide features insight from some of New York's most innovative artists. Today we will be talking with Lisa Hunter. She wrote the book The Intrepid Art Collector. This book teaches you how to find, buy, and appreciate art on a budget. Thanks so much for joining us here on Citywide, Lisa.
Thanks for having me.
Let's begin by having you tell us about your book, The Intrepid Art Collector.
Well, The Intrepid Art Collector is a book that I had been wishing someone else would write for years and years. When I first started buying art, there was absolutely no information for somebody who was interested in serious art but didn't have a serious budget. You could find all kinds of information about how to tell the quality of a Rembrandt, and there were books about how to buy collectible cookie jars, but there was nothing for somebody who had maybe $1,500 to spend on a piece of art and wanted to choose something that was not going to be an embarrassment later on or a bad investment.
What exactly makes you an expert on this topic?
I have a degree in art from Columbia and a graduate degree from the School of Hard Knocks, but I also interviewed a lot of experts for the book. I interviewed about 40 dealers, curators, auctioneers, and people from all different kinds of specialties. So the reason I realized no one had written this book before is it's just too broad for any one person to write based on personal experience. It needed to be done journalistically. It needed to be somebody who would go and interview lots of people and put the information together.
Is that how you did most of your research, interviewing people?
Interviewing people, and I have a huge stack of clips and books on different aspects of the art market that were taking over my house, but now it's all condensed into one handy little book. Now I can throw things out and have my house back and have some room for art.
Great. So why do you personally purchase art?
I think people have a very strong emotional reaction to art if they're collecting it seriously. It becomes a compulsion like any other kind of collection. And I think that when you live with works of art, you see them and understand them in a way that's different from the way you experience them as you pass by a museum exhibition for a few minutes. When you see something every day, you start to see how the artist sees things. You start to think like the artist. It's a very enriching experience. It's hard for me to understand sometimes how people can live without art. It's almost like saying you have to go live without music or you have to live without ever seeing a movie. It's such an important enrichment in everyday life.
What type of person will find your book most useful?
The book is really geared toward a new art buyer, somebody who wants to have real art, wants to move up from having framed posters on the wall, but doesn't really know where to get started. And the art market can be very intimidating to new people. When you go into a gallery, it's this hushed white cube space. The dealer, if you see the dealer at all, is in the back on the phone. It's not always a comfortable environment for somebody who doesn't know how much the art costs, because of course there are no price tags. And what this really is a field guide to understanding how the art world works, what kind of questions to ask, where to buy, and what things to look out for.
Yeah, I have a lot of posters in my room too.
Well, I think posters are a great way to start, because that shows you what you want to live with long term and what kind of art you're happy with. If you're going to get bored with something, better that it's a $20 poster than a $20,000 painting. But at some point, it's better to move up to an original piece, because an original piece has qualities that a reproduction just isn't going to have. It's sort of like the difference between looking at a postcard of Tuscany or being in Tuscany to look at the same view by yourself.
How exactly does, I guess, going to a... I mean, sometimes people might just... a lot of people buy art right off the street. You know, that in my home, there's a lot of art that we just bought on the streets of New York.
Well, when I first moved to New York, Keith Haring drawings were in the subway that you could peel off for free, and Jean-Michel Basquiat was selling his hand-drawn postcards for $10 a piece. So I'm never going to tell people not to buy art on the street, especially in New York City. You have no idea what you might be finding. A lot of art that is sold on the street is sort of tourist art, people who will draw your portraits for $20 or a caricature or something. But if you see a real artist selling work on the street and you like the work, there's no reason not to buy it, because it's probably going to be very inexpensive. You're not paying a gallery-type price for it, and you might as well take a chance. if you like it. But get the artist's name, and maybe even if you have a digital camera, snap a picture of yourself with the artist, because if the artist later turns out to be Jean-Michel Basquiat, then you have some proof that your piece is authentic.
Hmm. It's very, very important just that when you buy art, to just enjoy it. And not
absolutely.
That's probably the most important part, because I know I have a Superman painting, and I know it's not done by the original artist, but I got it on the street, but it was very cheap, and I still enjoy it.
Yeah, the point about buying art is you want to get a fair price, and if you want to buy something that's inexpensive off the street and the price reflects that, there's no problem with that. That's fine. My problem is with galleries are unscrupulous, and they try to sell reproductions for the price of a real piece of art. That's really what a lot of the book is about, is how not to get taken advantage of in the art market, because there are a lot of people who will try to convince you that something is real or valuable or is going to go up in value, and it's not the case. So the book really helps people understand what they can trust and what they should be skeptical about. But if something's inexpensive, go ahead.
If you could give a little glimpse of the book for our listeners, I mean, how does somebody tell if something's a fake?
Well, the first thing you should do is go to a reputable dealer, and that's the advice everyone gives, and the question then is, how do you know who's reputable? There are dealer associations where the membership is vetted and people are approved by their peers, and you have to be a legitimate dealer to be a member. And for people who don't know anything, who are really about to spend their first substantial amount of money on a piece of art, I would start by going to somebody who's a member of either the Art Dealers Association of America or the International Fine Print Dealers Association if you're looking for works on paper, because then you don't have to be as vigilant on your own. If you are looking in a sort of out-of-the-way place or at a different kind of gallery, you can usually spot fakes by looking for a few telltale signs, which I go into in the book. Most fakes tend to be machine-printed reproductions. And if you can tell what a machine-printed reproduction looks like, it looks basically like the same as a magazine cover. If you know what that looks like under a magnifying glass, then you won't be fooled by it. And that's 90% of the fakes you're probably going to encounter.
Have you ever encountered experiences where somebody says this was painted by a famous artist when really it was not painted by that artist?
You're not really going to find forged paintings necessarily at the lower end of the art market, but you'll see a lot of forged prints. A lot of people can take something and scan it and reproduce it, and they call it an original lithograph because the machine-printed technology is called offset lithograph. And some people who are very, very brazen will even say, it's an original offset lithograph. And what that means is it's a machine-printed piece like a museum shop poster, and sometimes you see them selling for $2,000, $5,000, even more, and it's scandalous and outrageous.
I actually learned that a lot of listeners on this show, it's not just New York people, because I know we've been talking about going to galleries, and there are plenty of galleries in New York.
Mm-hmm.
But do you know, how else can people buy art that, you know, probably perhaps don't have a gallery right around the corner?
Well, I think that regional artists in other cities are doing wonderful work, and if they haven't been discovered by the New York art scene, it isn't because their work isn't excellent. They're terrific, terrific pockets of artists in Pittsburgh and Chicago, well, which is a major city, and a number of other places, especially university towns. If people start going to art fairs and open studio events in their cities, that is a good way to find out about new artists. Also, get involved with your local museum. They often have programs with contemporary artists, and it's a chance to talk to people. Sometimes you can find new artists even on the internet. If you go on eBay and put the line in for self-representing artists, it'll come up with a huge number of artists who are selling their own work directly online for very, very little money. You're not making an investment in all likelihood, but it is a way to find inexpensive and interesting work, and often from artists who live in rural areas far away from dealers.
Well, doesn't that bring up a worry again about something being fake on eBay?
Well, if it's something that's by the artist himself and it's an unknown artist, that's not really so much of a problem. I wouldn't buy a Picasso on eBay, but if somebody says, I'm a graduate student at the University of Georgia in Athens, and here's my painting, it's $50, that's really not a likelihood of being ripped off.
You're listening to Citywide on WNYU 89.1 FM New York. I'm Darren Levy, and I'm talking with Lisa Hunter, who wrote the book the intrepid art collector. Now, I know that you were from New York, and then you moved to Canada.
Right.
So what compelled you to do this?
Well, I married a screenwriter who was living in Montreal, but also I think that at some point it's good to get out of New York and get a little bit of perspective. My theory is that the day you realize everything in your wardrobe is black and everything in your apartment is white, you might want to leave Manhattan for a while.
Yes, I very much love that line, I have to admit. I'm curious about how the art scene compares to New York and Montreal.
I find that the scene making art is just as vibrant. The city is full of people who are artists and dancers and theater people. The cultural climate in Montreal is wonderful. But in terms of the art market, you don't have the same kind of support from collectors. There are some galleries here, but you don't really see the same kind of support from private collectors. There's very much more sense that artists should get government grants and that government-supported museums should buy their work, and there's this big gap in the marketplace here. You just don't see people feeling that they can spend $20,000 on an emerging artist, whereas in New York, it's almost a contact sport. Let me see if I can get that artist before my neighbors do. So in one way, it's more focused on the artists here and less on the money. But it's more difficult for artists to make a living here, I think.
Which do you prefer?
Well, as a collector, it's nice to be in Montreal because things are much more affordable than they are in New York. However, New York has it draws wonderful talent from all over the world, so you have a greater variety of things that are surprising and new all the time.
Now, do you know why there's more of that focus on government grants in Montreal?
Well, I think in Canada in general, there's much more support for the arts than in the United States. In the United States, every election year, somebody will talk about eliminating the National Endowment for the Arts. And here in Canada, there's very much a strong sense that the government has a role in creating Canadian culture, culture that isn't going to just be swallowed up in the broader U.S. culture and so on. But a lot of people just assume that is enough to support artists. And people here often consider something that's $5,000 to be very, very, very expensive, whereas in New York it would be at the Affordable Art Fair. It's just a difference of how much people are willing to spend and what they think of as a reasonable price.
See, that makes me a little worried, because I'd be interested in buying, making that step from the posters to the art.
Yeah.
But, obviously $5,000, I know we talked about that this is, your book talks about how to make it affordable.
Sure.
I guess $5,000 I wouldn't really consider to be affordable, or maybe that's just me. But
no, I think that when I was starting out, $1,000 was a lot of money for me to spend, and often I spent maybe $300 or $400 on pieces, and you absolutely can find terrific pieces at much lower prices than $5,000, but you need to probably look at works on paper. Need to look at limited edition prints by artists or very new artists who might sell paintings. But I would say that for somebody on a limited budget, starting with works on paper is the way to build a collection that's affordable rather than trying to go to paintings.
So could you share a little bit more, some more tips that you have in your book? I know on the cover I saw that you talk about what should one look for in contemporary art, for example?
I think the first thing you need to look for in contemporary art is whether you really love it. A lot of what I see, especially in New York, is people following trends and trying to guess who's going to be popular and which artist is going to go up in value. And it's a loveless way to collect art. If the art doesn't mean anything to you, then really there are other places that you could put your money. So I think that seeing art and going to a lot of galleries is really important in determining what kind of art you're really going to want to live with. And New York is just the best place in the world for that because there's so much. There's so many galleries. There's so many art schools that are top-notch. There's so much art that you can see every single day and for free at galleries and art schools. So I think that that's where you start, is thinking about what you love. And then if you're concerned with investment, you have to start thinking about what other people are going to like as well. And then you have to start thinking about non-art issues like how well connected is the artist, who else likes the artist's work, does the artist have the support of a critic or a curator or an important dealer, because those are the signs that something's going to go up in monetary value. But if it's something that you can afford easily yourself and you love it and you think that you're going to continue to love it, I think that's great. a collection doesn't all have to be big names on a wall to impress neighbors. It should be about what you love and what's going to be satisfying to you to live with on a day-to-day basis. The investment potential is only important if it's an amount of money that you wouldn't spend just on your own pleasure.
You know, we talked about contemporary art. What exactly is contemporary art?
Well, contemporary art can be a whole lot of things these days. It can be a painting, it can be a performance, it can be a photograph, it can be a video. The definitions are very broad. It's exciting. It's also intimidating sometimes.
So you said video. I mean, do you think all filmmakers are artists?
Well, I find the difference between videos intended to be art and videos intended to be Sundance indie films to be very confusing, personally. There are a lot of things that I think are visually brilliant that don't get considered fine art, but it's an emerging field, and there's a lot of room for innovation, and I think a lot of collectors are feeling their way as they go because it's a new art form. It is sort of like the people who started collecting photography 50 years ago.
Now, you also mentioned how, you know, if you want to see if an artist has the backing of a critic before you buy their art. I think if I were an artist listening to the show, I'd be kind of worried. I mean, what tips do you have for the artist that wants to make their art more marketable?
Unfortunately, it's really, really difficult to get into the art market unless you are in a major city like New York and unless you've gone to one of the key art schools, many of which are located in New York. The issue for an artist who wants to have a good career is you have to find advocates. You have to find somebody with influence who's going to support your work and tell other people about it and sort of encourage people to take you seriously. And that's much more likely to happen if you live in a place like New York, if you've been to one of these art schools, if you go to gallery openings and meet the people in the New York art world. Unfortunately, a lot of making it as an artist is who you know as well as how good your art is.
We've been talking a lot about art school, a lot of art students. I mean, there's just so many art students that go to these art schools. I mean, not all of them can become successful artists.
No, not all of them do, but a surprising number of the young art stars come from the same handful of schools, from Hunter, from Columbia, from Yale, and some of the other New York art schools. It's possibly because that's where the New York dealers are looking for the next big thing, but also I think most very serious young artists think seriously about coming to New York to try to support their career.
You know, on the show I speak to a lot of artists, and I always ask them where they went to art school or and, you know, what they got from it.
Yeah.
And most of them, you know, some of them had great experiences and were very well encouraged by their professors, but others feel that they just, it was just another loophole that they needed just to get their degree.
Yeah, well, again, there's a difference between art and the art market, and you can have a fabulous art teacher in the middle of nowhere and have a great education that's challenging and interesting, but the art market is something else again, and somebody who wants to be financially successful as an artist has to think about both sides of it, and it's very difficult because they may not even go together very easily. And it doesn't go together very easily for collectors either. Sometimes you fall in love with something that is not ever going to be an investment, and you know that, and you do it anyway if you love it. And it's the same for artists. Some people know that their work is not going to be commercial or that they are not prepared to do the non-art things that are required to have a career, and as long as they're comfortable with that, I think that's fine.
What do you mean by non-art things?
Going to the right parties, schmoozing with people, promoting yourself. A lot of people who are visual are not very comfortable promoting themselves in the way that it is almost necessary in the kind of art market that we have now.
That's also very true. I've gone to press exhibits, and the artists will be there by their artwork, and I'll try to, you know, get some clips from them, and they'll be very, I mean, they've created the most, you know, a great piece of artwork, or photographers, great, you know, great photographs, and I'll ask them about it, and then maybe they'll have a couple, you know, a couple words for every question I ask, you know, so.
Right. Well, it's got to be terrifying. You are an artist because you express yourself visually, and then people expect you to express yourself verbally and not only be able to explain your art, but also to give slick sound bites about it. And it's a really difficult career, and you almost have to have two completely different skills to be able to do it.
Was Picasso a very talkative person?
I think he had a very commanding personality, but then somebody like Van Gogh didn't, and his career even back then, during his lifetime, suffered a lot for it. I think that there are almost certainly artists who are reclusive or shy or stammering who don't get a lot of attention, and whose work is probably pretty good. And from a collector's standpoint, if you can find those people, you can find wonderful work, and then you can try to support their career as well. But I'm sure that there are many, many talented artists who don't get the recognition that they deserve.
What is your favorite type of artwork?
I have very broad tastes, and what I found working on the book is that every chapter I was working on, I would fall in love with that particular kind of art. When I was working on the photography chapter, all I wanted to look at was photography. When I was working on the vintage posters, I started thinking about collecting them. When I worked on African art, I started wanting African art. So I have sort of art ADD.
There is a stereotype to art buyers that people have. You know, you say you're an art collector, and then you know, there is that stereotype of sort of being a little snobby. Do you think
right.
that this is an accurate sort of description of most art collectors?
I think the stereotype used to be true. It used to be a very elitist kind of activity, but I think that the art market has broadened hugely in the last couple of decades. The major auction houses now have divisions where they sell less expensive works of art. You can buy things for a very modest sum. Dealers are trying to promote their shows to the general public more. It isn't the invitation-only snooty world all throughout the art market the way it used to be a few decades ago. I think that if you look at popular magazines, Vanity Fair has the art issue just last month, and W had an art issue, and the decorating magazines talk about collecting art. It's become much more mainstream. Many more, quote, average people are getting into the art market now, and there are more opportunities than ever before. And I think that part of that is a broadening of what we consider to be artworks. A lot of things 50 years ago, like photography or Currier and Ives prints, wouldn't have been considered art at all, and you didn't really have the same sort of availability on the internet and for people to find out about art.
So you think the internet had something to do with this whole change?
I think the internet is huge, and that the change is only going to get bigger, because even when I was in college, if a dealer said, this is the price for this art, you really didn't have any way of knowing whether that was accurate or not. Today, you can look at a website like artnet.com, and you can see what the artist's work has sold for at previous auctions. You can Google a newer artist to see if other galleries are selling the work for less. There's much more transparency in the art market now than there ever used to be. It used to be much more like a secret club, and the buyer just had to trust and take people's word. And today you can do a lot of the research on your own. You can find a catalogue raisonné, which is a scholarly list of every known work by an artist. You can find out where they are online, go to the library, get the information yourself. These kind of things used to be limited to the top dealers and the auction house experts, and now anybody who's willing to do a little bit of legwork can investigate art. And again, with the internet, it's very easy to find out about new artists. And so I think it's just exploding and is going to become even more popular than it is now.
That's great that it's become so much more of a community. It's more about supporting the artists now and enjoying the work.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm hoping to encourage, people to take the plunge, go out there and buy some original art. If you know what to look out for, then you can really buy what you love and enjoy it forever.
You also have a blog.
Yes, I do. I have a blog called The Intrepid Art Collector. It's howtobuyart.blogspot.com. And people can send me questions about the art market. I often get very specific questions. People will sometimes send me JPEGs of paintings they've bought and ask me to identify it. If the question is a general question, I'll put it up on the blog and answer it. But I answer a lot of email every day with people saying, what is this? Where can I find a dealer who specializes in whatever subject? So people can email me.
How do you find out, when people just send you a JPEG of a painting, I mean, how do you identify it? That seems to be a pretty amazing feat.
Well, the main thing is to point them in the right direction to the people who can help them the most. But often some things are very obvious, like somebody sent me something recently that I could just tell from the picture was painted in acrylic paint, and that dates it later than 1950 because acrylic paints didn't exist before then. So some things I can help people with. Other times, if somebody sends me a JPEG of a print of a very famous image, I can say, it's a print of this image, and here's, you know, what it would look like if it were real. Go get out your magnifying glass, see if this is in the margin, see if the paper has this kind of watermark. And that's the kind of thing I go into a little bit in the print section of the book. You know, how do you, for example, with an Audubon print, how do you tell whether it's real or not? What should the watermark say? What size should it be? Those are all things to look for. And if I don't know it all, I'll steer the person to someone who does.
And you also do a lot of interviews on your website.
I've just started doing that, and it's a lot of fun because once you have a blog going, it's a great chance to ask artists questions. And I've met some very interesting people through the internet, dealers and artists, and discovered many people whose work I admire. And I'm a big fan of reading artists' blogs, just not only to see interesting new work, but also to see an artist's perspective on the art market and who else is good. Because artists usually have the first sense of who the other good artists are of their generation, and it's always interesting to listen to them and see what they have to say. The artists know about the good artists before anybody else does, often.
Well, I guess that brings me to my last question here. After someone finishes reading your book, The Intrepid Art Collector, and they put it down, what do you want them to walk away thinking?
Where's the nearest gallery?
Terrific. Well, I definitely I look forward to getting your book and reading it through and learning how to purchase art, and I wish you the best of luck with your blog and purchasing art and all that. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
For more information about Lisa Hunter and her book, The Intrepid Art Collector, you can visit her blog at howtobuyart.blogspot.com. That's howtobuyart, all one word, .blogspot.com. And that's it for Citywide. I'm Darren Levy. You can email your comments about today's show to citywide@wnyu.org. Visit Citywide on the web at wnyu.org/citywide. Keep it here on New York University Radio, because up next is experimental acoustic music with Heather on Outside. Citywide will be back next year with more exciting, new, and great interviews. Thanks so much for tuning in, and from everyone here at WNYU News, have a great night.